Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, tonight, it's my pleasure to welcome Allison Sutter. She's got a master's in education and is a best-selling author and contemporary spiritual teacher. She is highly acclaimed for her ability to seamlessly blend spirituality and practical self-help information, making it relevant to daily life. Allison's digital courses currently serve students in over 32 countries. She resides with her husband and three girls in Chicago, and she has out a book called Accelerate Your Mojo, which is available on Amazon.com. And if you want to contact her on the World Wide Web, just go to living360coaching.com. That's living360coaching.com. And then you can find out more information about her and get in touch with her. Anything else that I should tell them about you, Allison?
No, that was wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Allison, how are you tonight?
I'm fantastic. How about you?
I'm doing well myself. Yeah, it's nice to be inside where it's warm, though. It's mighty cold outside.
Yep.
You know, I count God for every single blessing, and this time of year, that's one of the blessings that I thank Him especially for.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it is so important to count blessings, don't you?
Absolutely. It's where you point your focus, you know, so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, that attitude of gratitude raises your level of vibration and seems to attract more things to be grateful for, too.
Yep, it's all about the vibration, and that's what the basis of my work is about, is the vibrational conversation.
Well, let's talk about it. I'm interested in how you blend spirituality and practical self-help information.
Well, the ironic thing is we're already doing that because we're consciousness incarnate. So, I mean, we're blending spirituality as we talk. I mean, once you become, you know, a human being, you're born incarnate, you are spirituality blended with practicality. And so all I've done is taken this awareness of what we already are, and hopefully through the book and through my work has just made that a revelation for people. And then the self-help part is just the transformations that are, if somebody wants them, and they're all inner transformations that lead to outer different shifts in perspective and actual the continuity of your experience, your physical experience. So it's something we're already doing already, ironically.
Well, before we go further and get into, I wanted to talk about those transformations. You and I were talking about the title of your book beforehand. And for the listeners, what do you mean by accelerating your mojo?
So the definitions are so important because this is we're using these definitions that we hold of things to examine the world. And so for me, accelerate doesn't mean your typical, you think of a vehicle going faster. It doesn't mean go faster. It means realize something sooner. And literally our waking life is a series of revelations. And so to realize something sooner, the mojo aspect of it is to realize mojo means this connection to non-physical that we are. And so when we realize this innate, ongoing, ever-present connection to this non-physical aspect of us, people call that spirit or spirituality or soul, you can access so much information, and life literally, your revelations accelerate because your perspective shifts, your vibration shifts. For example, one of the transformations is to learn how to transform fear when it shows up, fear and anxiety and doubt, those negative emotions, because no human can live without experiencing them, and it's not about getting rid of them. It's about learning the language of emotion, and then when it shows up for us, not staying stagnant there, but shifting it to something else. And so accelerating our mojo is really recognizing the blending of physical and non-physical that you are, so that you can accentuate your experience here, and it just be that much better.
Well, I like the fact that you talk about emotions as being negative. I mean, that there are negative emotions instead of bad feelings, which I hear some people say, because it's neither bad nor good. It's all good. It's just part of our experience as being humans. And as you said, there's no escaping them, although a lot of people do try to escape uncomfortable feelings through various means like addiction. And how do you encourage people to embrace that aspect of their human experience and move through the negative emotions so that they don't become overwhelmed?
Well, the first thing to know, it's okay. I mean, I think we've been taught to that self-expression in what we've deemed a negative fashion, anything that's, you know, below a certain level of the spectrum, we've been told and trained that that's not okay. You know, that's it's improper, impolite, or bad, or worrisome, or stressful. And the way that I teach is that I just say it's a spectrum, and we fluctuate along the spectrum the same way that, you know, vibrations go up and down. And the clients that I work with, we learn through daily experience how to just be okay with them and live with those, what we deem as negative emotions, as data feedback. They're telling you something about your connection with your physical, your spiritual self. It's telling you you're disconnected. And then the physical ramifications of that are when we are disconnected from our source energy self, we don't have access to the answers to some of the challenges that come up that we want. We have answers. They're just not the ideal answers. So it's a whole vibrational thing that I work with clients, and it has to be done on a daily experience. This isn't something that intellectually you can comprehend and then have it be different. We just don't work that way. We work through the time space dimension of experiences. You wake up, you go to sleep, you wake up, you go to sleep, and you have these experiences, and they're really data feedback. And if you can learn to look at them as not an imprisonment, you know, the bad stuff is bad and the good stuff is good, and they're lucky and, you know, I'm not lucky and no one loves me and everyone loves, you know, it's these conversations that we have in ourselves. If you can begin to back away from that and have a different perspective, and that, you know, that when you have these uncomfortable sensations, that they're not a condemnation of your self-worth. They're simply feedback telling you where you are in relationship to your spiritual source self, that you're farther away, which means you'll have less ideal solutions to some of the, you know, challenges that you're having. Eventually you just learn to go, oh, okay, so I'm feeling anxious, or I'm feeling scared or guilty or jealous. Oh, okay, so that's feedback telling me that I've disconnected, that I'm farther away from my source energy self. Okay, you know, let me see what I can do to work myself back. And it becomes this easy translation and transition, and not this struggle that so many people deal with, where they could spend days, weeks, months, years, you know, struggling, and I shouldn't feel this way, and this is bad, and I have to stop this. It's like, no, you don't. You don't, because you never will.
Well, what's the way to work yourself back?
Well, yeah, like I said, you have to start with just acknowledging that it's okay. And you have to stop having conversations with people that go, it's not okay. Or you have to stop looking at personal development that says, live fearlessly. Or, I mean, I saw a magazine. It was a magazine about success. And the title was, you know, it was like, live without fear. So you have to turn away from those conversations that are being, you know, pummeled at you. You look at anything in personal development, it's usually about get rid of fear in 30 days, fear 30 days. And, you know, it's like, you can't do that. So stop having conversations where you think you can and start having conversations where like, oh, I get it. It's a data feedback mechanism. That's it.
Well, that makes sense. Just use it like a barometer for where you're at. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and find people that understand these types of conversations and focus on them, because what's going to happen is you begin with the conversation and you begin by, you know, talking to someone like yourself or myself who understands this and goes, oh, it's okay. So I feel like garbage, but it's okay. So now what do I do? So, okay, so you take the specific example or situation you're in and you begin to shift your perspective. And the other thing that my work accentuates is the micro movements. I'm not about these large, gigantic jumps, because no one ever does that. We wiggle our way up the spectrum or down the spectrum. And for example, somebody who is like, so I'll give you a perfect example. So this morning, my oldest had a panic attack. She's a sophomore in high school and the workload is, you know, crazy. And sometimes she just, her system gets electrified and she was just like, oh, I can't breathe. I can't do this. I just said, it's okay. You know, and I kept talking her through it. I'm like, nothing is that bad. We'll take the day off. It's okay. In about 20 minutes, she moved up to sadness. And most people go, well, she wasn't happy. I don't care, because anxiety to sadness is a move of empowerment. You are moving up the spectrum. It's a good thing. So when she got to sadness, I was like, all right, we're good. We're going to have a great day. And boom, and then from there, she sailed up to, because I didn't say sadness was bad. I didn't say you have to be happy. I knew that she had made a massive movement toward aligning with her sports source energy self, which is that more positive feeling that we want.
Well, I always talk about it like climbing up the ladder, reaching for the next best thought, feeling, or action. And a lot of times it does take an action to raise a level of vibration. At least that's what I found. What do you think?
I think so, because we're typically physical beings, you know, and so whether that physical thing is a conversation or whether it's an actual physical movement, we're designed to be in motion. And so, you know, it's part of our nature. So one of the parts of my work is moving from just taking actions to inspired actions, which I view as different. Inspired actions are actions driven by the greater connection to source energy that you always have. You know,
can you give some examples?
Yeah, so like when you're feeling positive emotions, and like, for example, like when I wrote this book, I didn't look toward another writing teacher to give me specifics on how you write a book. Like some people will go start to finish, do this, you know, they give you instruction on how you're supposed to write a book. I said, no, what I'm going to do is follow, my highest level of excitement in any given moment, taking as far as I can take it till I can't take it any farther without it needing to necessarily do something. So the way I compiled this book was I followed exciting ideas. And like, so some of the anecdotes that I wrote in the beginning of the book were some of the first things I wrote. And then I might have skipped around to something else. And then there wasn't a way that you could follow me from someone looking on my experience. It wasn't a to-do list. It wasn't like I wasn't following a guru. I was doing what my inspired action was for that specific day or time. And then I compiled it all together. So does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And that's kind of the way I go about it when I'm writing too. I like it. It works for me.
Yeah, and somebody else, I was just on a business, someone did a summit for business owners, new business owners. And she was like, well, how do you apply this to business? And I'm like, well, if you had a choices of whatever choices are in front of you, let's say you're at the point where you need to do marketing. And you have a choice between Facebook and, you know, whatever your choices are, direct mail or, you know, whatever. And you look at all of those choices and you go, which choice feels the best to me? Now, it might not be what you were being instructed to do from your business coach, but for you, it's an inspired thought because it feels the best. And what that means is you're getting instruction for your higher self, and your higher self has a perspective that's like a mountaintop perspective. It's like a broad level perspective that you don't have. And the more you follow your inspired action, which is your connection with your higher, your source connected self, the more accelerated your journey will be to the end result that you want.
So that can help you in terms of achieving your desires.
Absolutely, because inspired action to me, like I said, is guided by this connection with your higher self. It's a connection, it's a conversation between you and your higher self, and your higher self is going, it gives you excited ideas, which may not be logical to anyone else, to anyone, not even you. But the sequence of it is being inspired by your higher self's broader perspective. It's got the mountaintop bird's eye view, and it's going, all right, David, I'm going to give you an idea, and it's going to feel really exciting. But when you, if you share that idea with, you know, your friend Joe, Joe's going to go, well, David, that's stupid. That's so out of sequence. That doesn't even make any sense. But you're like, oh, my God, it feels so good. I just really want to take this inspired action. You should take it because it's the guidance from your higher self, which is leading you around the most exciting path to your end destination. Some people call that goal. Some people call that, you know, desired experience. But you're going to have the most fun if you follow this inspired action that's guided by your connection with force.
I love that word, inspired action.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. So who is the accelerating your mojo process for?
Well, I don't do your typical demographics. What I did is I said, I had a list and I'll just read a few of them. But it's for four individuals who feel a certain way. And I have a checklist of 15 questions. And they're for people who want to get to the root of their emotional discomfort. So we kind of talked about the emotional spectrum. It's for people who struggle to make decisions because they worry they're not making the right choice. You know, they're riddled with indecision. They are people who feel like fear and doubt are stopping them from having the awesome experiences that they want in life. A couple more are people who, you know, can't seem to figure out why what they're asking for in life isn't showing up. There are people who experience strong thoughts of self-doubt, anxiety, or unworthiness. And down in the spiritual realm, there are people who want to have this conversation and this understanding for themselves about their innate connection that they have with source energy, the source energy aspect of their self. You know, they really want to enhance this conversation. There are people mm-hmm. who want to use positive and negative feelings as the diagnostic tools that they are for empowered living. And those are just a couple things.
What are the things that can accelerate the process or turn it backwards in terms of accomplishing goals or desires?
I'm sorry, say that one again.
Well, I'm wondering what can either enhance or impede the process of realizing one's desires.
Well, it's your vibration, which is identified through your beliefs. Your belief systems are the articulation of your vibration. Your emotional guidance system is the articulation of your vibration. And this is a vibrational world. I mean, the quantum physicists know that. They know we're based on vibration. So, you know, your beliefs. So many people like to make excuses like, I'm a victim of this. This got in my way. And we're so good at that. Almost every
yes.
human does that. So the conversation that you and I are having is a rare one because most people, and a lot of people are victims of spirituality, right? They're victims of karma. They're victims mm-hmm. of past lives that are getting in their way. That's all baloney because the only thing that exists is vibration right now. And so that's what is either impeding or enhancing your experience. And it can be identified through your beliefs and through your emotional spectrum and through your physical result. Like, what do you see happening in your experience?
Well, if somebody wants to overcome a victim past, they have to take responsibility for their lives and increasing their level of vibration if they want to move forward, yes?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you literally have to turn away from the conversations that you have with your friend group every Tuesday night where you get together with a glass of wine and you start bitching and you start talking about how everybody else is, you know, pointing the this is what I'm talking about. You got to say no thank you to that conversation, because that conversation is throwing fuel on the fire. It is pushing your vibration in a direction that you don't want it to go, because it enhances the victim mentality. People, the thing is, these conversations are so embedded in our psyche. You know, they're so easy to have. You know, we text our friend like, oh my God, I can't believe so-and-so just did this. Victim. You know, they're so easy to do and have. So you just got to be really mindful of what you're saying and doing, you know, to stop and listen. You know, if you've got that group that you attend every month, every week, you know, the neighborhood gets together and they go out for a rest, you know, listen to what people are saying and ask yourself if they're pointing fingers away from them or they're simply saying, you know, I want to understand this experience and I'm willing to say I'm a participant, you know, if not the total creator of my physical experience. Big ball of wax to kind of play with.
Well, I always say it's important to watch the people and places and things that you associate yourself with to shield against negativity.
Yeah, and I think most importantly, we need to start looking at ourselves as the so if you imagine that, you know, imagine a big room, and on this room, there's just you in the middle of the room, and on the walls are a 360-degree screen. And it sounds like a sci-fi film, but everything that's projected on the screen is an expression of your belief systems, of your experiences, of your memories. That's, in my opinion, literally what our life is, but it feels so solid, we doubt that creative expression. We go, I would never do that to myself, because we judge positive and negative as different. We judge one as good and one as bad, but we are literally the creators of this experience, even though it feels so physical, part of the game. But once you begin to
how can we avoid falling into the judgment trap of calling things as good or bad?
You start practicing. You get involved in conversations and communities. You read books that are talking differently than being a victim. Like there's a spiritual intuitive. A medical intuitive that I think has amazing information. But there's one part of his story where he becomes a victim of spirituality. He said, I didn't choose this. And I'm thinking, yes, you did. You did choose this. He's like, spirit came in and spirit said, do this and this. And I'm thinking, no, you're the spirit. This is your full experience. No, you're not being victimized by spirit. So even the most elevated consciousnesses are still calling themselves victim in some sense. You got to just walk away from that. When you see it, start asking yourself, am I seeing an empowered conversation or am I seeing a victimized conversation? And over time, like I said, this is an experience by experience, day by day, minute by minute, expansion of awareness. Like you're not going to wake up tomorrow and be totally different. You're going to have one thing's going to hit you one day. Another little thing will hit you. And you'll feel your perspective shift. And when you feel your perspective shift, your vibration has shifted because what you're seeing is shifting, right? You can only perceive what you're harmonic with. Listen, I went to France with my husband a couple years ago. He did the Paris Express Paris. It's a bike race from Paris up to Brest and back. And he rode and I took the train. And on the train, they had to reroute the train. It was like a 2-3 hour delay. And so they gave us what I thought was a refund. What they gave us was a voucher. But the whole time I'm thinking, oh, I'm getting great. I'm getting a refund. I come back home. I fill out all the information. I mail it in. They send me back my voucher, which I thought was going to be a check. This whole time I'm thinking I'm getting a check. So I'm about to take it to the bank. And my husband's like, you can't do that. That's a voucher for another train ticket. My belief was so strong, I could not see the physical evidence of what was there in front of me. It is like that with everything. It is like that with everything. So it wasn't until my vibration and my knowledge shifted could I actually see what it was. You won't see what you're not harmonic with until you are. And it just takes experience. I can't tell you what that's going to be because that's called the unknown. But it's incredible. This conversation can only happen because we're harmonic. Nobody can find me and I can't find them unless there's coherence. And sometimes that's negative coherence, what we deem negative, and sometimes it's positive. But it's all coherent.
Right, right. Ideally. Well, what kind of transformations are possible from doing the Accelerate Your Mojo work?
Well, because I'm a teacher, it's all about simplicity. So all I did is I took the list of who this is for, and I flipped it. So what people find and the transformations that the students that read the book and work with the online program and stuff get are they start to clearly understand the root cause of their emotional discomfort, and they free themselves from the burden. They start to learn how to always know what their next best step is in any situation. I had a woman I did a beta test for my online class, and she started out so doubtful of herself, so unsure of what was her next. I mean, she was constantly, you know, just like, I don't know. And within 3 months, she's like, I know how to confidently, well, not totally, but more than I had, represent myself and what decisions are right for me. Like, how important is that? Like, that's so important to us. You learn to use the fear, doubt, and anxiety, as well as the positive emotions, as guidance and not condemnation. Like, I think when we feel guilt, it's swimming in doubt as well as to our worthiness. It clouds our worthiness, right? And so being able to feel that but then move through it, you reunite with this sense of worthiness that is innate in us faster. You know, it's weighed in gold. The transformations are you can be comfortable in your skin, live life unapologetically, experience thrill bumps of self-love, self-appreciation, and self-confidence as you witness, and this is important, as you witness for yourself how life is always working out for you. So there's the flip from victimization. You'd learn to clarify your true spiritual nature, embracing this aspect of self as the most cherished, trusted, and dependable relationship. I mean, your relationship with your non-physical side should be your best friend. It should not be your spouse, your partner, your, you know, girlfriend since childhood. It should be this non-physical vibration that's you. That should be your BFF, right? And when you can rely on that relationship, which you can, you don't get so bent out of whack when other people choose different kinds of experiences. Those are just a few things.
Next. Yeah. What do you believe about the power of affirmation?
It depends. A lot of people say affirmations but feel negative. They think it's the process of articulation that's doing something in their experience. It isn't. And because it's the vibrational aspect of us that is creating the experience, if someone is, you know, writing in their journal or saying affirmations but still feeling a sense of deprivation or fear or guilt or loathing or whatever, it's not going to make a darn bit of difference in their experience, I'll tell you right now. So it's like prayer. Prayer is only powerful when you're feeling positive. If people pray in deprivation all the time, they're like, please, God, don't let this happen to me. It's like, well, he's not doing it, you are. So,
Well, is there a way to frame an affirmation if you're feeling deprived, let's say you're not feeling prosperous right now, and it's your desire to become more prosperous, Is there a way to frame that so that you're both acknowledging the state that you're in and the state that the quality that you hope to achieve?
Yeah, but I would never write an affirmation. I don't care how many weeks or months it takes you. I wouldn't write an affirmation with a sense of deprivation. I would do something else that releases the sense of deprivation and then do the writing. So maybe, you know, going to a spin class releases it for you, or taking a walk, or doing some art. Don't do it until you've released the sense of deprivation. So find the moment. And everybody, you know, binge watch Netflix till you get happy and then write your affirmation. Like, don't do it while you feel it. And everybody's got some point in their day where they feel a sense of reprieve. It's some, you know, your cup of coffee, whatever. Don't do it trying to force change. Don't do it. Don't do the affirmation because you think doing the affirmation is going to create the change. Make the change and then write your affirmation.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And again, it employs using an action.
Yeah. It's following your inner guidance, which says, David, today what we need you to do is put on purple socks or go to the library instead of going to the grocery store, whatever. You know, follow that sense of relief. So, for example, with my daughter, I know that pushing her in her sense of anxiety will do nothing. Talk doesn't do anything. I can't talk her down from it. I have to let her feel her way up. So I know that when she comes to work with me, I work at a Montessori preschool during the day, and when she comes to work with me, that gives her the sense of relief that she needs to elevate her vibration so she can go back and do the work that she needs to do. I never say do the work when she's feeling this sense of anxiety, because it's like, I mean, so many parents think that, you know, buckle down, hard work, do it now, do it even though you feel anxious. Well, you know, I mean, we all grow up and we realize that's a crappy way to live.
Right.
So I let her, let her take the day off, and I let her release the anxiety, elevate her vibration, and then she can go back and do the work more accurately than she would have otherwise.
That makes sense. It sounds like it's a very practical approach to living, actually.
I think it is. In fact, my middle daughter, sometimes it baffles her because I've given my kids tools for empowerment with their homework and with their life choices. And to a lot of people, that's crazy because they assume that the kids are going to go down the wrong track instead of the right track. And I assume they're going to go down the right track. So I've given them, like, I don't tell them to do their homework. I don't tell them to study. They do. And then they talk to their friends, and their friends' parents are hovering over them, telling them what to do. And my middle daughter's like, that's just crazy because how are they ever going to make the decisions they need to make? How are they going to experience making a decision, having a consequence, dealing with that, dealing with the emotional, you know, armature that goes along with that, unless you do it? You don't, unless you do it, right? This is the same thing with my work. The people that get into Accelerate Your Mojo, you've got to do it. You've got to roll with it. You can't just read about it. You actually have to start to mold the clay of your life into a different form.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just got a little flash from Windows that distracted me for a moment. I have a question here about the seven steps. What are the seven steps?
Okay, I will tell you them very briefly. I'm sure we don't have time to go to all of them. But again, they are my work is inner work. So the first step is to ask for what you want. You can either do that verbally, you can have this conversation with the universe that we talk about, because it becomes a virtual reality immediately when you ask for it. And then the third part of that asking step is to align with it, all the stuff we've been talking about, like to align your vibration with the request. The second step is desire and recognizing that as a potent fuel. And because I think desire has been personified as a negative when it's actually a positive sensation. And so I teach my students to realign that sense of desire as an exciting exploration instead of a sense of, we've been trained to think it's like a desperation, or like you ask for something and then you go, oh my God, I can't have it. So there's like this, you know, sense of mm-hmm. I can't right away. Mm-hmm. The third one is to analyze your beliefs, because they are literally creating the fabric of our reality. And there's, you know, there's like a year's worth of conversation there. The fourth step is allow, which is, again, fine-tuning a lot of what we're talking about, fine-tuning your vibration, because you've got to allow the good stuff you asked for in step one in. You got all excited about step two, and you went to the trouble of changing your beliefs for in step three. Now you've got to allow. And so, you know, all these steps are they're cyclical, and they all support each other. And the fifth one is focus of attention, because where we're focusing in repetition, both emotionally and mentally, is creating like a film strip, the accentuation of our experiences. So the film strip is just separate, isolated pictures that light's flowing through, which creates a sense of movement. That's us. That's our experience. We're the light. We have this snapshots of life experience. And so where we're focusing is going to create the texture and the physical part of our world. And then the sixth one's inspired action, which we talked about. And then the seventh one is detached optimism. And I included that one because in personal development, I saw a lot of talk about visualization, and it was a lot of encouragement to be very specific. And I saw that as problematic, because what was happening was people were being so specific. It was like they were digging their claws in, and they were thinking, it has to be like this because I imagined it. This is the way it has to be. And so they were missing, clues to, or invitations to walk around difficulty, because they were fixated on what they thought it should be. So detached optimism is not about thinking, it's about feeling. It's about feeling into your experience with a sense of optimism and letting go of this visual specifics, because as creators, we're so gifted at the use of our imagination that we do it without, it's like an automatic function, right? You're constantly thinking about things. But when you can feel your way in with this detached optimism into the thing you asked for, again, it comes in accelerated fashion, because you're not holding it at bay thinking it has to be a certain way.
How can we let go of that thinking that can keep us going around in circles? I mean, to the point where we're not letting go.
So, say that question again, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just wondering how we can let go of the thinking that spins us in circles around the same thought so that we're not actually letting go of it. Does that make sense?
It does. So you don't have to let go of the thinking. We don't have to let go of any of the habits that we have. I think it's more about mm-hmm. understanding their function in the creative process. So it's not that visualization should be stopped or is bad, because we can't. But it's if you decide that you want to depict an experience for yourself from the visual standpoint of you're putting in the characters and you're putting in the scene, like I want to go to the Bahamas and it's going to be January and like you're putting all of these in, you know, and my family's going to be there and you're putting all the specifics in, fine. As long as you understand, it's probably not going to be like that. I don't want to take away the fun of visualization, but a person has to practice understanding the function of different components of our psyche. Like the thinking part is an important part. You just want to know its functionality in the bigger picture. Because the thing is, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. It's called the unknown. You can think about your day tomorrow. You can think, well, I'm going to go to work. I'm going to get dressed. But there are components that you just can't know. And this is what messes with people, because they go, I was supposed to be at the car place at 3, and then I was supposed to get dinner at 5, and it didn't happen like that. And they get all upset. they had the details all mapped out, and it didn't go that way. Well, yes, you can map out your details, but you need to understand from an emotional standpoint, probably not going to be that. It may, but it may not. It's practice. Yeah. It's practice going through the minutia of your day and seeing it work out and seeing it not, and going, okay, so here I got really upset, but wait a second, I heard this interview with David and Allison, and they talked about how I was visualizing my day, and then I got mad because I, oh, okay, I get it. So next time I'm going to do that a little less, or maybe next time I'll just recognize it again, right? I spent probably 3 years just recognizing myself in my experience. I had to see myself getting, I didn't try to get rid of my anger. I just tried to recognize it. I had to recognize how I was personifying my middle daughter as the scratchy, as the you know, difficult child. And it wasn't until I changed my mind about her that I could see a different aspect of her. Right? You got to catch yourself. You just got. And the thing is, if a person's listening to this interview, the manifestation of this conversation already happened vibrationally a while ago. So our conversation is a physical manifestation of a vibrational one that happened before, let's just say before now, before this moment. So the listener coming right to the show already made specific decisions about what they want to learn and do afresh. Now they're hearing the physical conversation. So they've already made the vibrational decision. Now so this is how it works, right? So they're already way ahead of, you know, give themselves a pat on the back because they're already ahead of what they thought they were.
That makes sense. Well, speaking of listeners, let's go to Joanna. She's been listening to the show. Let's see if she's got any questions or comments.
Sure.
Hi, Joanna. Anything you want to say?
Hi. Yes,
hi, Joanna.
David and Allison. Hi. Actually, yes, you've spoken about a lot of points of what I'm going through right now. I am struggling and conflicted about a very dear friendship that I've had for years, and their process is to shut down when they are depressed or overwhelmed. And if you try to reach out to them, it just pushes them back even further. We've spoken about this before. He's apologized before. So I'm at the point right now, it's like, how do you reconcile this within yourself? Or how, in other words, is this fair to myself to keep going through this, or do you allow them that you know this is their process, or is it a point, have you had enough already? Or, that's just the struggle that I'm going through right now, in other words.
So is it that you're worried about this person, or is it that you don't think they're accepting of what you have to offer in terms of help, or where is the struggle?
No, it is the worry, because I see the train wreck coming. I see what they're doing on social media sites. I know their patterns, and it's just getting worse and worse, so I can see it coming. So it is the worry, but in trying to reach out to this individual, that just seems to, like, push them back further. So in the past, you have to just, let them be, and then they will eventually, regulate and come back. This time it's seemed the worst, and it's been the longest time of non-contact and blocking and things like that. So that's it. And then you my struggle is, okay, well, you just totally let this go, or do you let them back in your life, or do you try to reach out to them, but they're not going to respond when you try to reach out to them? That's what I'm going through, in other words.
So, what's interesting about us humans is unconditional love is the greatest challenge of this experience. What I mean by that is we need conditions to be a certain way in order for ourselves to feel good. You need your friend to be different in order for you to feel good. So this is this is what everybody does. We look upon friends and loved ones and children. We go, you need to be different because I'm worried. Well, that doesn't work because everybody's here to have their own specific experience. And, by and large, we just need to let them have it. But here's what you can do. So you need to sit within the context of this situation and ask yourself, can I look upon this person and feel good despite what I perceive their situation to be? If the answer is no, you may need to step away. Like, I can't tell you, David can't tell you, but you can connect with your source energies, and it will give you an inspired idea. that idea may be to step away, because we know that when we're feeling bad, like with the example with my daughter, when she goes into her panic and anxiety, if I go there too, I can't help her. So the minute you fall off the couch and you're like worried and scared and fearful, you actually can't help the person because your vibration is as low as theirs. So sometimes we have to just step away, as painful as that decision is, because we're under the impression that I can, like, we're under the impression that we actually can affect other people's lives. But in reality, they're the only ones who can do it. So, but you may want to have the conversation within yourself that cuts yourself some slack, because you've probably been trained that if you don't reach out and help somehow, that you're a bad person, or you're not trying hard enough, or that just, it means you don't love them. None of that is true. Those are just conversations that we've been taught to have. So my advice would be to find something, whether that's if you meditate, if you ride a bike, if you take walks, if you draw, if there's something that you can, if you go sit and people watch, something that you can do where you can, you yourself can get into a better vibration, feel relaxed and feel good. And then just start having this conversation in your head where you're like, I don't know what to do. It feels like I should reach out, but then that feels bad because I'm worried, you know, and then gauge your choices. You know, maybe I just need to step back, even if that's painful at first, because ultimately it's the only way I can feel better. That's an appropriate choice, no matter what anybody reflects to you, because then you can stabilize and you can look upon your this person's activities. And sometimes the most challenging thing is just to watch another person crash and burn. And sometimes we just have to, you know, my sister was homeless at 47. Sometimes there's nothing you can do. And part of this conversation that David and I are having, the importance of the spiritual one is for us to recognize the infinite nature of our experience. And the more that you delve into these conversations and this understanding of the, and you actually accept the infinite nature of your being, this, the swiftness of this life experience and the ups and downs of it don't become as painful. Like, my mom died when I was 20 of cancer, and I saw upon her transition how we are more than physical. I saw it. I'm this 20-year-old who's, you know, knows nothing of spirituality, who's had this, if you want to read the book, I tell a little bit about my upbringing in the book. It was pretty tumultuous with my sister. I recognize that there is an infinite nature to our being, and these physical experiences, we can get so hyper-focused on them and they can be so painful. But when you pull back and you truly understand that there's value in everything, there is value in this person's experience, even though we're perceiving it as negative. It's incredibly experienced for them. And the more negative you can be, the greater your asking is. And then when you align, that's why you can see people who go from like homelessness and poverty to, you know, making tons of money. Because when you align, the speed is there. So, you know, bottom line is you got to take care of yourself.
Exactly right. Exactly. That's what I've been thinking. Exactly.
Well, hopefully that'll you know, and again, listen to your inner guidance, listen to your source energy conversation. And in the book, if you go to my website, there's a way to get into a free digital class where we talk about step number one, but you could have a conversation with me in that class. And if you had any further questions, you could certainly ask them, it's a lifelong learning process. We'll never be done with these kinds of questions, ever.
Yes, you're right. Well, listen, thank you both, and bless you both, and Happy New Year, and thank you again.
Thank you, Joanna, and God bless you.
Okay. Oh, thank you, David. All right.
Yeah, I'm sorry to have cut you off. I hope you got to say what you wanted to say, Joanna. It's interesting how a lot of people have to hit bottom before they can start to move in a positive direction.
Right. And it's so interesting how the more you can understand the spiritual nature of your being, the less negative those kinds of experiences will be in your own perception. Like with my sister, like I said in the book, I talk about my upbringing, and she was basically diagnosed with like schizophrenia, and she was running away, and she was in rehab by the time she was 13. And it was just a bunch of stuff going on. But now looking back on that experience and her continued what would be deemed traumatic life experience, I can look at her as a soul-based individual having an experience in one lifetime that is extremely valuable, in my opinion, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of these are learning opportunities for us as infinite beings. Like these, I don't believe this is the only lifetime we have. I believe we have multiple parallel ones, and they're all for the purpose of being in here messing with the clay. You know, it's all good.
Well, I think that gets me back to thinking about something I said earlier, and that is, you know, I count my blessings, but, you know, I also count as blessings those things that didn't feel good, because, as you mentioned, those are learning experiences, and sometimes those are the most important things that come down the pike for a person.
Absolutely, because when, like, sounds like you already know, it's a guidance system. It's the same way that if you, you know, you don't want to cut the fingertips off your hands just so you can put it on the hot stove. You want to know when something hurts so you can move away from it. Or you want to know when something's uncomfortable. So fear and doubt and anxiety and guilt and shame, they're all necessary because they're all pretty much the same. You could just say it's fear or love because it tells you is you are separate from source energy in this moment. And source is going, you want to come back? Because I'm here. I'm always here. Want to come back? Come back when you're ready. Okay.
Well, one of my favorite spiritual authors is Anthony DeMello. He's been gone for a long time. But he talked about, it's just something you just said triggered this for me. He talked about how there really are only two states, love or fear. And anything that is not of love is generated from fear. And that makes sense to me. You know, that's that positive. That negative, the yin or the yang. Oh.
Yeah. I mean, it's all just, I oftentimes have an image in my head of like a house with tons of windows on multiple different floors. And every time you go to a different window and look in the house, you get a different perspective. And if you go there at night and you go there in the afternoon and look in, you know, you're constantly getting different perspectives. That's what emotional states are. They're just different perspectives. Like you wouldn't go up to the house and go, I hate this window. It's dark. And all I can see is the living room. You'd be like, oh, it's dark and I see the living room. But if you turn that fear, you'd go, I don't want that. It's terrible. It's just a perspective. That's it. That's all it is.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested in reading that you say that you channeled your book. Tell me more about that.
Well, so channeling is interesting because channeling is just a state of alignment. It's when you're doing the thing that you love to do where you don't recognize, you become no thing, no body, no time. Like you don't recognize your body. You kind of leave it in a sense. You don't know you have to go to the bathroom. You don't know you're cold or hungry. You lose track of time and you're just doing your thing. Like everybody has an occasion in which they're just doing their thing. They're in flow. That's channeling because what you are is in alignment with your source energy self, which has access to all information. So what I did is I love writing. I wanted to integrate. When I first started doing curriculum development, I started using fictional stories to teach visualization, actually. So what I wanted to do with this book is I just got in a space where I felt really good and just started writing. And I followed my highest level of excitement with the ideas. And I just trusted that the words were going to make sense, that it was going to be, everything was going to be good. And so that's all channeling is. It's just alignment with self, with their source energy self.
That's
I played
what
music.
I do when
I
write.
I played a lot of music while I wrote. Yeah.
Say that again?
Oh, I played like Hamilton. It was right around when Hamilton was really big. So I turned on Hamilton and just punch out a couple chapters of, you know, whatever felt good, crazy stories, mm-hmm. you know, whatever popped in my mind.
Well, I think that's an interesting description of channeling. I like that very much. I just wanted to say that I could relate to that, and I write books too, and I don't have preconceived notions. I just trust that what's meant to come out on paper will, and it does. It does. It just evolves as I go along, and, you know, of course, sometimes I go back and change some things because I receive new inspirations, but generally speaking, 90% of what I put down is what remains, you know, and it just flows.
That's your channeling. So you are channeling in that state. The person that does art or music or science or builds a battery-driven car, like flow state. Everybody is channeling in that state. It's a natural human condition. It's not some weird woo-woo stuff.
Well, let's finish up by talking about a little bit more about aligning with Source. Any practical things that people can, I mean, we have talked about this, but I'd like to go over it a little bit.
In terms of what they could do?
Yes.
Well, that's going to be an individual basis. So I would say follow their highest level of excitement in any given moment, taking it as far as they can take it until they can't take it any farther, but not needing it to necessarily produce something, although it will. That's the guidance system. So you could do that so you'll be in alignment if you go to your closet and you go, what's the most exciting thing? Like, I put on blue velvet leggings today. That was the most exciting thing I could do in that moment. And it felt, and so I was in alignment when I picked those pants. Now, when my daughter discovered I have blue velvet pants on, she's like, do you really have blue velvet pants on? Yes, I do. I was in alignment when I picked those pants because they felt really good. That's called being my true self, right? One of the real you. This is what it is. It's not anything crazy. It's minute moments of your day. You align all the time. When you drive down a road that you feel like, you know, like, I'm just going to go right today instead of left. You're in alignment. When you go to the grocery store and you're like, oh, I'm going to pick this versus that because it feels better. You're probably in alignment. Now, if you pick stuff because you think it's what you should eat instead of what you're inspired to eat, well, then you're out of alignment. If you're picking a meal based on what someone else told you you should eat, you're out of alignment.
A lot of that would have to do with awareness, doesn't it, of recognizing that you're entitled to do what makes you feel best at any given moment.
Absolutely.
Instead of following some of those tapes that we have ingrained in us that focus on the shoulds.
Well, absolutely. Like if someone listens to this call and they go, oh, I'm going to the grocery store. What should I do? Should I follow the list of, you know, the latest diet book or do I do something else? Well, you do something else and here's what you do. You go to the grocery store and you go, you know, with a couple of things. Do I want an orange or an apple? You hold them in your hands and you go, which one feels more exciting? Apple, orange, apple. Okay, orange, because I'm feeling like there's no sunshine and I need some vitamin C. Great. That was an aligned action. And it's good for you. You know, if you can take the time to do that, then you're making more aligned choices. Now, are they perfectly aligned? Maybe not, but who cares? They're more aligned than they would have been otherwise.
Well, I think that's a great place to stop since we just have a minute left, unless there's anything else that you'd like to say.
No, that was good.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, so once again, we come to a close. Let's take time to pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience when we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Good night and God bless. Good night, Allison.
Night.